la bestialidad imperialista. Bestialidad que no tiene una frontera determinada ni pertenece a un país determinado. Bestias fueron las hordas hitleristas, como bestias son los norteamericanos hoy, como bestias son los paracaidistas belgas, como bestias fueron los imperialistas franceses en Argelia. Porque es la naturaleza del imperialismo la que bestializa a los hombres, la que la convierte en fieras sedientas de sangre que están dispuestas a degollar, a asesinar, a destruir hasta la última imagen de un revolucionario, de un partidario de un régimen que haya caído bajo su bota o que luche por su libertad. Y la estatua que recuerda a Lumumba, hoy destruida pero mañana reconstruida, nos recuerda también en la historia trágica de ese mártir de la revolución del mundo, que no se puede confiar en el imperialismo, pero ni tantito así, nada.
Hi, I'm Freer Freedom.
And I'm Coral Reef.
And we're the Tangerine Dream Team.
Tuesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM.
Geoengineering is the artificial modification of our Earth's climate systems to mitigate global warming.
Surface waters in Northern California and many regions of our nation are testing alarmingly high in aluminum, barium, and many other dangerous contaminants.
Are we being exposed to danger?
Yes, you are being exposed to hundreds and even thousands of times higher than safe levels.
Is it the clouds from the airplanes?
Yes, our generation never had clouds that came from airplanes. Yours does. But those are not clouds. Jet trails now remain in the sky for up to an entire day, spreading out and raining reflective particles like aluminum that disrupt our planet's weather patterns.
We may also be suffering undue drought and vegetation losses, Alzheimer's and other neurological and respiratory distress.
What can we do? Please, please.
Please, investigate for yourself. AmericanSkyWatch.com.
Hi, this is Mauro and the Tangerine Dream Team, 101.1 FM, Santa Cruz, free and wild radio preserve, because baby guitars need a place to play.
Welcome to the show.
Titled Shark, Tiburón. Now, the purpose of the song was to express my and our dislike for intervention. Now, U.S. foreign policy has been intervening in the region all this time, so of course the song would directly be placed on the U.S. But then a funny thing happened. England had a problem also with Argentina. And then the song all of a sudden is not a song that can be applied exclusively to the U.S. I am also opposed, if the Russians would walk in, send an army and walk inside of any Latin American country, you know, like just walk in to put order and whatnot, I'd scream. Of course I'd scream, because what's the difference between a Russian or North American in terms of intervention? None. The problem that we've had in Latin America, though, has not been with Russian paratroopers or Russian Marines. There weren't Russian Marines who jumped in Panama in 64. There weren't Russian Marines who jumped in Santo Domingo in 65. If there had been Russian Marines, we would have thrown rocks at them too and asked them to get the hell out of there and go back to where they belong. All we want is to be left to deal with our own problems. I think we have the capacity, and at any rate, we have the responsibility to do it for ourselves. Tiburón! Against intervention, pap!
Rugen la mar embravecida. Tangarire, con la maeta que el sol espera.
And cynicism is what's making the vote go down. Cynicism is what's killing the turnout. Cynicism is what's letting the Rush Limbaughs of this world get away with what they're getting away with. So we're battling against cynicism. You know, we're battling in favour of participation. And we're battling against war.
Saddam killed his own people, just like General Pinochet. Once upon a time, both these evil men were supported by the USA. And whispering, even Bin Laden once drank from America's cup. Just like that election down in Florida, this shit doesn't all add up. It's all about the price of oil. It's all about the price of oil. Don't give me no shit about blood, sweat, tears, and toil. It's all about the price of oil.
A vice president from a major international consulting firm came down, and who was also had connections with the National Security Agency and knew that they had identified me and recruited me for this job, because economic hitmen work through private corporations, not directly for the government. That keeps everything much more secret, and it leaves the government out. The government cannot be implicated as long as this is being done through private consultants. Our job was to convince other countries to take very large loans, and then to convince the World Bank and other such organizations to give these countries huge loans, let's say $1 billion, to Ecuador to build big infrastructure projects, power plants and transmission lines and distribution systems, ports, highways, industrial parks, things that didn't benefit anybody except the very wealthy people in those countries, who were quite corrupt, and we corrupted them. So our job was to convince, let's say, Ecuador to accept $1 billion loan, convince the World Bank to give Ecuador $1 billion loan. 90% of that $1 billion would come back to the United States to pay for Halliburton, Bechtel, these kinds of, or these types of companies, to build the infrastructure, and which would only serve the wealthiest people in those countries. And then the country would be stuck with this huge debt, which over time would continue to be refinanced and get larger and larger and larger. So that in fact today, Ecuador owes more than 50% of its national budget just to pay down its debt service, which means there's very little money left to go to pay for the education or health services for the poor people, who are the ones who suffered from these projects. It was their rivers that were destroyed as we built hydroelectric plants. It was their land that was destroyed. And while a few of their people got wealthy, as a few of ours did. So now they're saddled with this incredible debt that they can't possibly pay. It's a terrible situation, and what it is all about is building empire. We've done this in every country around the world that has resources that we covet. Often this is oil in places like Indonesia, Nigeria, Ecuador, Venezuela, Colombia, so many different places. But sometimes it's other resources. For example, in Panama, it was the Panama Canal. And in this process, we've managed to create the largest empire in the history of the world. And we've done it largely without military might. It's been done primarily through economic hitmen like me. Now, when the economic hitmen fail, as we've done some, as we did in Panama with Omar Torrijos, and in Ecuador many years ago with Jaime Roldos when I was there, when we fail, the jackals are sent in. And these are CIA-sanctioned troublemakers. They will try to foment coups in a country. They'll try to overthrow the president. If they fail, if they're not able to do that, then they'll assassinate him. And Jaime Roldos of Panama, who was not overthrown, so he was assassinated. And Omar Torrijos Jaime Roldos of Ecuador, Omar Torrijos of Panama, the same thing happened. We economic hitmen failed, the jackals went in and assassinated these presidents. It happened with Allende in Chile, Arbenz in Guatemala. It's part of what Vietnam was about. And when the jackals fail, and the economic hitmen both fail, as in Iraq, the final step is for us to send in our young men and women to die and to kill. And that's what we're doing in Iraq today.
Thank you. It's all economics. It's chicken shit and it's cruel, but we keep doing it. And the average person driving an SUV never sees that connection. I thought after 9/11 we would just, I honestly thought we would start using less oil.
I don't own a car.
I entertained owning a car at one point, but right about then the first Arab oil crisis came in, and that kind of dissuaded me. Well, when you're using a bike, it's good for you. It's healthy. It's making you strong. When you're driving a car, you're getting fat and lazy and you're listening to Rush Limbaugh.
Need no
Some people see someone.
Hi, this is Free the Land. This is Free the Land, and it's time for Boycott of the Week. It's going to be a regular segment where you can call in about a local business that you'd like people to boycott. This does not represent the views of the station or any of the DJs, just the anonymous callers. Number here is
427-3772. So call in if you have any kind of gripe about a business during this week that you'd like to express and just talk about, share, and just some kind of complaint for our boycott. This will record our first boycott of the week. Tonight here on the Tangerine Dream Team and Free the Land Show. So, again, our number 427-3772. Call right now. We're going to have to play a song. We're expecting a guest. And we've got music. So we want to hear from you. Call in. Da-da. Thank you. The song we just heard was by Superior Olive. This song is by Morrow. They're both in the contenders for Battle of the Bands, which I'll have you vote on.
I look out the window below, the cloud that you do.
I gaze up.
I gaze to the star above. Tips of a prayer, a faith I believe. My body is piloted away.
Miles High by Morrow. This is the second of the contenders. First was Superior Olive with Lately I've Been Thinking. Next comes, you'll hear it, it's Getting Stronger by Tenderfoot Tim.
You have a hold on me. just to survive. I would have done anything for a love to stay alive. I can't wait very much longer. You understand, I have no regrets. I wouldn't trade anything for the love that we share.
So Much Stronger by Tenderfoot Tim. Oh, we have a call coming in.
People say the government is up there in airplanes spraying all kinds of chemicals
but
to change
we're waiting
to manipulate
for this report till... Okay, what... caller! Oh, we haven't got you on the line here.
Yeah, I'd like to boycott the Sentinel because of their conservative reporting.
What was that? You'd like to boycott?
The Sentinel newspaper.
That means Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Yes.
And for any specific reason?
Because of their conservative reporting. Thank
you.
Got it. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Another dutiful listener to the Tangerine Dream Team and the boycott of the week. And the little snippet you heard was what we were going to be discussing in the next hour, talking about what's happening in the skies. We were going to have a guest talking about what's happening on the roads. Hasn't arrived yet, so we are anticipating the calls that will be flooding in, and that'll be coming up at 7. This will be discussing contrails versus chemtrails, the definition of which has been put out by several theorists, several scientists that are getting together almost ready to announce that they have and Obama is ready to announce this too, that we've come so far that we need to do radical means to help this climate and that control the weather and control the temperature on planet Earth, which means you know what he's going to reveal, and we'll be talking about that at 7 o'clock. And so from now on, I'm expecting that we're going to have a winner of the Battle of the Bands, The three for the week for the local bands were Superior Olive, Morrow, and Tenderfoot Tim. So if anyone has an opinion, call 427-3772. I just played those three selections, and I could play a little bits of them again, but if you want to request one of them, I'll be sure to play it. So at this time, I'm going to hit the CD player, and I'm going to play the next selection by Superior Olive. Hello, everyone. We have Micah Posner in the studio, and we're going to introduce him now, and he's going to be talking about events coming up. Okay, Micah, from the People Power, glad you could join us.
Thanks for having me. People Power and Free Radio, it's all good combinations. I work with People Power. We have 500 members in Santa Cruz County that care about sensible transportation. In particular, bicycling and walking, and that's how we're supported. There's no government money or corporate money, and we're showing up on Thursday for a project that's very important to us. We call it the Project of the Week. The proposal to have a bike path that goes between Santa Cruz and Live Oak and Capitola, called the Broadway-Brommer Connection, is going to the California Coastal Commission. And they will decide whether or not we can do it. The city's voted for it. The county's voted for it. The community is for it, at least, you know, in majority. And now it's up to the Coastal Commission. So we're hoping to get everyone there. We're going to meet at 9 a.m. at the steps of the county building. We got bagels and spreads for everyone and coffee, and we have some green organic t-shirts people can wear if they support the project. And then we're going to go, the Coastal Commission is going on a public tour of the area of Arana Gulch Green Space, so we're going to go too. We'll ride our bikes out there and walk around with them with our little t-shirts and all. And then after that, they're going to break for lunch, and then sometime after 1, there'll be a public hearing. We're hoping people can come and show their support for the Broadway-Brommer connection, which is part of, which would go across the Arana Gulch Greenbelt property.
Micah, how much will this cost?
Well, it's several million dollars in government money that would be wasted on a transportation project for cars or something of that nature. Part of it's funded because the city owns some property there that they're selling, and part of it comes from money that could be used for any transportation project, most of which gets sucked up by things like Highway 1 widening. And then there's a little bit of like parks money that we use to protect the plants that live there and other things like that there.
So that 1 o'clock meeting, that was, where was that again?
Oh, both 9 o'clock and 1 o'clock are at the county building, which is 809, isn't it? Ocean Street. It's the intersection of ocean and water.
I think that's 700. It's across from the courthouse, the building right across from the courthouse.
Yeah, it's right across.
And that's on the fifth floor?
It's on the fifth floor, but we're meeting at 9 at the steps down below.
Okay, so the 1 o'clock is the fifth floor one.
The 1 o'clock is the fifth floor.
All right, well, we hope to see you there.
Probably 1:30 would be enough, but it's a little unclear. The Coastal Commission is, you know, they're not necessarily going to stick to an exact schedule. So
I see.
Between 1 and 1:30 up there.
Okay, so you pretty much ride everywhere for all your transportation needs, right?
I ride everywhere. I've been car-free for 2 years.
All right. Yeah, I don't own a car either.
Yeah, right.
You don't even initiate patrolling. If someone's giving you a ride, it's only if they're going. You only go if they're going the way you're going, right?
That's the theory. I mean, you know, maybe.
That's good.
Maybe once a year or something. I think 2 years ago I rented a truck to take a bunch of concrete to the dump.
Mm-hmm.
That was noteworthy.
You can't really backpack a bunch of concrete on your bike.
Yeah, well, that was an exception. But yeah, the rule is that I don't own a car, and I never go in a car alone, because even though I have a license, I don't drive one for my own purposes.
Well, early on, we had some segments about intervention around the world on behalf of the oil companies, and, you know, it's really because the American public prefers to drive their car. They're kind of at fault for the atrocities that go on around the world, because people don't really think about it. They just get in their car, and
right.
It doesn't affect them.
Right. I mean, one really powerful statistic, you know, in my mind, is that a third of all car trips are under 3 miles, both in Santa Cruz and the United States, and two-thirds under 5 miles. So
you can easily bike that, right?
Yeah, you can walk it. I mean, imagine, the corollary to that is, you know, 20% of all trips are under a mile. So imagine if everyone just walked or rode their bikes or took the bus for the trips that are a mile or less. Mm-hmm. Imagine what that would do to congestion, to global warming, to, mm-hmm. to accidents. I mean, cars are the leading cause of death for people under 35.
It's like over 40,000 a year die in America alone from
right.
car accidents.
So imagine if we all walked a mile instead of driving, we would save all those lives.
Yeah,
we'd save, you know, whatever, 4,000 people a year.
It's 40,000.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think about how many miles and taking a rough calculation, if we just eliminate those trips.
Yeah, so that's, you know, just death on a personal level, death at war, and then the greenhouse effect, which could cause a lot of people to die here in a few decades.
And the short trips are the most significant for global warming. Per mile, the first few miles are much worse than the other miles. And, you know, and then I think, I agree with you, of course, Free, and then there's also a more complicated way in that, you know, by driving, we support a society that continues to get people to drive. So, you know, it's, you know, that... Caltrans says, well, we have to, you know, we're riding the highway because you're driving. And that's not entirely true, because to a certain extent the tail's wagging the dog and these institutions are coercing people to drive. But but we do bear a lot of responsibility for continuing that cycle. So if everyone, once again, as an example, if everyone who could physically, which is 90% of the population, you know, did 1 mile trips without a car, then the whole system would change and it would be much easier to do 1 mile trips without a car. And in fact, there would be this sort of unraveling of this sort of car-centric society we have, which is, you know, which is coercive in itself. So the, you know, the more people, the more people drive, then the more we make it easier for them to drive, and then the more people drive, and etc. Mm-hmm. And we could do the opposite. We can make it easier to ride and bike, and the most important way to bring that about is just to ride or walk. I mean, I would say that, you know, another important thing to do, less important, is to join People Power and get involved. But honestly, it's more important just ride your bike or walk. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing you do. If you want to work with People Power, can I give a little pitch?
Sure.
You can call us up at 425-0665. That's 831-425-0665. Or go to our website, peoplepowersc.org.
You also have an office right next to the Sub Rosa.
Right next to Sub Rosa, right next to the bike church.
Mm-hmm.
We're in there at the hub.
And that's across from Saturn Cafe in...
On Pacific.
The other place.
Yeah.
And that's another good idea for a boycott of the week or a year or decade is just stop driving your car.
Yeah. That's a big deal. It's really, there's nothing more important and more wonderful. I mean, I think part of the reason I'm involved with the bike movement instead of other movements that are really important, like, you know, rent control or prison reform, other things that are very important, is that the bike movement is, it's radical and it's serious, but it's really fun. I mean, I saw there's someone in the studio who was, when we were talking about driving, everybody was making, like, you know, obesity motions. And it's true. Like, riding your bike is an expression of being alive and being engaged. I'm not saying that's easy. It's hard to be engaged and alive all the time, especially in modern mm-hmm. America. But it is joyful when you pull it off, you know? So, I mean, you know, I'm in great shape. I eat as much as I want. I'm an awake, aware person. And so is my 4-year-old daughter, because we make choices that allow us to live that way. And so, when we're saying, look, you know, boycott your car for a year, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's going to be awesome if you can pull it off, you know, or some version thereof.
Yeah, I did.
Wouldn't it be awesome if they allowed to not have parking for apartments and not have to allow for parking spaces anywhere?
Yeah, now that's the kind of thing.
That's another issue we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
Is if like, say, public housing was just limited to people that didn't drive cars.
Right. It's a funny issue because, you know, a lot of us are of a socialist bent, and we're the government should intercede and plan things for people. In this particular instance, the government is planning things for automobiles to the mm-hmm. detriment of everyone, including the developers. So there's a big developer in town, Jonathan Swift, who recently put on a presentation with environmentalists with Transition Santa Cruz, and they're arguing together for getting rid of these requirements to force everyone to have cars, because the developers lose. They can't be as creative about making money as they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
The people that want housing lose because the developers pass on the cost to them, whether you're a renter or an owner. The mm-hmm. environment loses because they're effectively subsidizing car use, so you might as well have a car. You're already paying, you know, thousands of dollars a year for the parking space, whether you use it or not. You know, and so everybody loses,
mm-hmm.
and still we continue with this idea. So this is again one of these sort of sweet spots where it's like, The only thing that's gaining is the status quo. You know, it's mm-hmm. not like, it's not rich against poor. It's not, you know, environment versus business.
And it's not just one parking place either. Every time, every car requires how many parking spaces?
In Santa Cruz, every car, it's 4 to 5. In Santa Cruz, it's about 4. So for every car registered in the city of Santa Cruz, there's 4 parking spaces. It makes sense if you think about it. You got a parking space at home. You got a parking space at the store you go to. You got a parking space at work. And then you got one other parking space at large.
Mm-hmm.
And all those parking spaces have to be available in order for this outrageous system to
work. So basically, the government is subsidizing the use of the car at the expense of everyone else.
That's right. 50% of the average American city, in Santa Cruz it's about 40%, is devoted simply to roads and parking. That doesn't necessarily include gas stations and auto supplies places, but just both on-street and off-street parking and roads. So, you know, if people are thinking, God, you know, it's really hard for me to ride everywhere because things are too far. Well, part of the reason things are far apart is because of the cars. I mean, things mm-hmm. are 50%, you know, they're twice as far because you're using all the... I mean, imagine if you built your house that way. If you said, golly, I really want to have direct access to the bathroom, so I'm going to put an extra hallway, you know, from each bedroom to the bathroom. Then your house is twice as big. It takes twice as long to get around. You have to, you know, sweep your floors twice as much. I mean, people would think you were an idiot, but here we are. We're all idiots. I mean, we've made our cities twice as big for the, quote, convenience, unquote, of being able to drive cars everywhere. It really doesn't make any sense. And like I said, it doesn't even make sense to people we don't usually work with, like this developer. He thinks we should reduce the parking requirements, too.
Yeah, well, that if it saves him money, I'm sure he'd be all for it. But then how do they patrol and make sure people don't have a car? What kind of...
Well, I'm not necessarily advocating for that. I'm just saying that don't require people to have car parking. So if someone wants to have car parking because they have a car, you know, that's fine. They can have it on their property. And if they don't want to, they don't have to.
But, I mean, say the rent is going to be cheaper at a place because there's the parking space is missing, but then they're just going to park their car across the street in front of their neighbors or something. I mean, how would you deal with that problem?
Right. Well, that is the thing about the status quo. It's like it works for everyone, you know, and people are concerned about having parking in front of their house. So there's two answers. One is that the less radical answer is you just make it incremental and you do it carefully. So, for example, about 40% of the city of Santa Cruz already has permit parking. So for those areas, you know, if you don't have parking at your house, you still get one permit or two permits or whatever you're getting now. So in a way, it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? It's you'd only park. So there's enough. They've done the math and legislated it to make sure there's enough spaces on the street for everyone to have a certain amount. So in a way, it's a moot point whether you have parking in your house or not, because if you don't, you're SOL. Like if you don't have parking at your house and you have four cars and you have one or two permits, you just can't do it. You got a deal. You'll get a ticket if you park on the street. So for those areas, we could change those rules right now. And then the other place we change them right now, like, is in my neighborhood. I live in the hood in Lower Ocean. And nobody cares. I mean, people just aren't all hung up about, you know, those kind of rules. I mean, people park in front of my house every day in the summer to go to the boardwalk anyways. And I don't care, neither do my neighbors. So, you know, yeah, some of the areas that have more of a suburban value set, they might be concerned about it. So don't start with those areas. Start with my neighborhood, you know. Start with my house. I don't care if people park in front of my house every day. They already do. So so that's another answer. The most radical answer, which I have to admit isn't necessarily that palatable to people that are attached to the status quo parking in front of their house things, is let it go. You know, supposedly it's a free society. So, you know, for people to have the quote privilege, unquote, of parking in front of their house, the society totally suffers for it. I mean, I think that San Francisco's a better model. Like, it's really hard to find a parking space in San Francisco. That makes sense. That's a real cost of driving. You know, so
it tends to discourage driving then if it's a big hassle. So yeah, maybe
it discourages driving, and it's actually free market. I mean, I hate to sound like, you know, libertarian or whatever, but why are we messing with the free market in a way that's bad for everyone? You know what I mean? In San Francisco, it's the free market. No one has to have a parking space. So if you want to have a parking space, you have to pay a whole bunch of money to have one. And if you don't pay a whole bunch of money, then you have a hell of a time parking. Well, that's reality, folks. You know, it's like, again, it's like...
Yeah, people are spoiled. The low gas prices we have here, too, are kind of... They're spoiled
it's the
by
same
that.
Deal.
It's much more expensive in Europe.
Right. I mean, the analogy is like, you know, imagine legislating that, you know, everyone has to have, like, you know, a banana tree in front of their house. You know, it's like, why are we legislating that everyone gets to have a parking space? You know, I mean, everyone's perfectly has the right to create a parking space on their property. They should do so if they want to have a good parking space.
Yeah. You know, there's something about riding a bike that is radical. It almost radicalizes you just doing it. And, you know, I think part of that is because to someone in a car, a person on a bike, is somewhat of a villain. I mean, they don't want to share the road with you. You know, they get upset. They think you should be on the sidewalk.
Right.
You know, it's like, dude, didn't you get a ticket for leading a demonstration about the take the lane?
Yeah, I got a ticket because when people were killed on Mission Street accidentally by trucks, we worked with the city to create an alternative bike boulevard on King Street. And as part of the demonstration for that idea, we organized a family parade on King Street on a Sunday when traffic was very quiet.
I remember. I was there.
You were there. King's a quiet street. Lots of kids, lots of fun, everything. The police told us that we could have a permit for it. But then they got back to us and said, oh, we just want to make sure that when you get a permit that you're going to ride either on the sidewalk or on the right side of the street. So it's illegal to ride on the sidewalk on King Street because it's in a residential neighborhood and unsafe. And there is no right side of the street. There's no bike lane, and there's cars parked there, which is the whole point. We want to get a bike lane. So the reason we're having this ride is to demonstrate a different way to use the street, which is the only safe, legal way to use the street.
It's legal, too. You can take the
lane. It's absolutely legal to take the lane, but the city doesn't necessarily like that. So
the police don't like it either.
Right, the police don't like it either. So they didn't have the courage to give me a ticket at the event, but a month later they mailed me a ticket for organizing a parade without a permit.
See, that's why Critical Mass doesn't have leaders.
That's why, right. I found that out. I should have talked to you first.
But so have you paid that ticket?
No way, man. I'm not paying that ticket.
How old is it?
It's just the same as those tickets that, you know, homeless people get on the mall. There's no real way for it. It's a pseudo-legal thing, and, you know, there's no real way for it.
Oh, but careful. That could be contempt of court.
Well,
you know, you could so work it off at Huff, actually. I hear Robert Norris is working off his ticket working for People Power.
That's right.
So I'm going to be taking a phone call, and we'll see. Keep talking until then.
Yes, everyone would like to talk to Micah about People Power. The lines are open.
Yeah, Mike. We've been expecting you. This is Coral. And we're wrapping up with the last part of the show. I'm doing good. How are you
okay,
doing?
Let's hear again. When is that event?
So the Coastal Commission hearing for Broadway Brommer, which is a bike path that would go from Santa Cruz to Live Oak through the Arana Gulch green space, is at... we're meeting Thursday at 9 in the steps of the county building, and the official public hearing for it is around 1:30 at the fifth floor of the county building. The county building's on Water and Ocean, 701 Ocean.
So this has been trying for like 15, 20 years to get this bridge in, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been trying for 15, 20 years to get this bike path. To be fair, there's people I respect on the other side of it. I mean,
those environmentalists, isn't it?
Well, there's environmentalists on both sides of it. The bike path would go through a nice little green space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's pavement on a green space, so it's a little bit sad. On the other hand, there's thousands of people that are too scared to ride their bikes from Santa Cruz to Live Oak Capitola.
It's dangerous.
You have to ride on major arterials. So, you know, it's analogous to sort of like the bike path on the Great Meadow. We think it's a real net gain for the environment and for human culture, even if we're sad about a little more pavement. So that's you know,
well, I like
that's
your
our stance.
Tenacity. It shows you've got some political ability. You also interact with Rotkin over some stuff. I mean, he was talking to me about they're building palaces for cars all the time. He was kind of on your side on this.
Oh, yeah, Mike's an active member of People Power.
You know, have you ever thought of running for city council?
I've thought about it. I mean, you know, it's that same conversation we should all be having at where we're most effective. I love working at People Power. I think I'm pretty effective at People Power. So would I be more effective in city council? You know, probably
well, more
not.
More effective than the people we have, I'm sure.
Well, but I wouldn't be at People Power anymore. I mean, that's the thing. You're not replacing. You're replacing.
No, it's only a couple of weeks, you know. You can sleep through the meetings like Ryan Coonerty does. I mean, how hard could it be?
It's probably pretty hard to get anything done in city council, I would imagine.
Hello. We have a caller on hold here, and I'd like to sort of wrap it up with you, Micah, and invite you to stay. Can you hear us now, Michael?
I can.
Okay, this is Michael Murphy, and I have a promotion to play, and then we're going to start talking to him about chemtrails, contrails, and his work.
Some people see someone on a bike, and they just react like, you're on my road. What are you doing on my road? I've had
after
people yell out the passenger side when they got right next to me as they're roaring past. Something very loud and unintelligible. I have people honk their horns when they're 5 feet behind me. I've had people flip me off for no reason. I've had people honk their horn to call attention to me from 75 feet away across a highway, and when I looked over, they flipped me off. Get off of my road. I think it's our road.
The theory is that chemtrails are being used in conjunction with HARP. By spraying metal oxides into the air above enemy skies, then directing ELF waves from HARP to heat those metal oxides. The temperature of the sky is raised to more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, preventing the accumulation of water vapor that would otherwise form clouds and produce rain.
I'm just turning the mics up so you guys can talk to him when I ask him questions.
Imagine the effects of chemtrails on the battlefield, causing extended droughts in enemy countries, drying up their resources, forcing surrender.
It's like the time that this...
Okay, we have Mike Murphy on the line who's calling in from the Los Angeles area. Mike is an activist and participant at the recent AAAS conference. He's a journalist, he's an independent journalist, and movie maker. He has a video on blip.tv at the moment. He has interviewed several candidates for Congress, sheriff, and governor, among others, and he is here to talk about his work and his article he's written. And he uses truemediaproductions.blogspot.com to promote some of your articles. Is that right, Mike?
That is correct.
And what is the the nature of your work at the moment as far as writing this article. Was it because you were an activist and you wanted to attend and to find out what the scientists were saying down in San Diego recently?
Well, yeah, it was more than that because, you know, I've been witnessing the strange lines in the sky, like many other people around the world. And somebody had told me that there was a geoengineering meeting that was occurring in San Diego. So naturally, as a journalist and somebody who was curious and very concerned about what was going on, I decided to go down and cover the event.
And a chemtrail is defined as a deliberate effort to dump unknown substances rather than just exhaust from a plane. Is that the understanding I should put out?
Well, that's what most people call it around the world since the alleged train had started about in 1997. The scientists, however, call it SAG, which stands for Stratospheric Aerosol Geoengineering. And when I was down at the meeting, they were talking about the plausibility of implementing these programs worldwide to ward off what they call global warming.
How were they talking about that? Was there special clinics to talk about it? Did they have discussion groups, or did they just all talk together?
Well, you know, it was both. They also had breakout sessions, but there were a number of different workshops. Workshops that looked at the potential benefits and potential risks of doing this. They even had they had workshops where they were talking about the specific ingredients which they were planning on implementing, those being aluminum, barium, and titanium that they would put into the upper atmosphere. They even had a workshop where they were discussing different techniques that they could sell this program to the public.
Okay.
What isn't one of the downsides that there'll be lower crop yields since they're reflecting sunlight away?
Well, that's one of the stated risks. Yes, absolutely. Also, you know, people who depend on solar power have seen a great decline in their ability to get the solar power. So absolutely, I mean, there are so many risks associated with geoengineering. It's incredible.
And also the ozone depletion as well, right?
Ozone depletion is one, and I actually have a list of some of the other risks that they were talking about. Some of those risks include droughts, acidification of the ocean, tremendous environmental impacts, rapid warming if they stop the program, human error, unexpected consequences, military use was something that was discussed, conflicts with current treaties, who would be controlling this. And then they also looked at the moral hazard of doing this, and then the moral authority, meaning do they have the right to do this? So a lot of risks, but the general consensus of talking about the plausibility of doing this was that we have a man-made global warming problem. So they were talking about seeding the clouds to control the alleged warming that has been recorded.
And this is the warming caused by people driving cars. I mean, the simpler solution would just be to stop driving cars without all these negative effects.
And flying airplanes, that's a big cause of global warming, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, but still, that's debatable. That hasn't been proven yet. So, but that's what they believe. You know, the consensus was that they believe, and you're exactly right, if CO2 is the cause, which there are many people who doubt that it is, yeah, it would seem like there would be more simpler methods and things that could be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of a Hasidic story about a fool who can't sleep because his chickens are in his house, so he brings his goats in.
Exactly. So sitting there in the meeting, being a concerned citizen, asking questions, it was actually kind of a frightening situation that I was in. I mean, I heard these scientists talking about literally geoengineering the planet to ward off global warming.
And we have another call coming in, so I'm going to see if they'd like to join in on this discussion right now.
Okay.
Just a second. But continue on, and you two can talk while I get this call here.
Now, from what I hear, there's been chemtrails have been seen since the early 90s. Is that correct?
Hello?
Well, you know,
hi, Marl.
Some people say early 90s. What most people are saying that they've seen the lines in the sky, aerosol screens, since about 1997. That's, you know, an incredible entry.
Okay. We also have another caller.
Okay. And we've seen, you know, a lot of, it's been reported that this is on the increase. I mean, this year has been reported by so many more people. They're saying that there's an incredible increase in 2009-2010.
Interesting. So we have Mauro on the other line. Can you hear us, Mauro?
Yeah, I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. We got you loud and clear, and welcome to the Tangerine Dream Team Free the Land Show. We're just talking with Mike about a lot of things he learned at the conference recently, which you attended also.
I attended on the outside. I was part of the protest, and my group had a few people inside, and I met Mike down there. And, you know, we've all been coming at this from different angles because for one reason or the other, the alarm sounded in us really loud about this meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How long have you been actively protesting such events?
The geoengineering stratospheric aerosol program, a.k.a. chemtrails, I've been since 1999 when I saw my first one and thought it was a rocket that had gone bad.
That's when
I've had various websites, but when they started using the word geoengineering, I saw an opportunity to really go at them because now we were talking the same language on the same page.
Okay.
That's us and the scientists, anyway.
They were, okay. Yeah, it's been almost it's just been overwhelming. There's lots of information on chemtrails. There's lots of, stories about people that try to debunk, people that are debunking the idea that, you know, the excuses for chemtrails being that they're contrails and all the efforts they go through to try to prove that they're not really, people aren't really seeing what they think they see or feeling what they feel.
A contrail only lasts for a few minutes or something, right?
Well, a contrail, usually a normal contrail dissipates within about 4 to 5 seconds. We're seeing lines that are lingering in the sky for several hours, and we see the plane spraying them. And, you know, I want to bring up, you brought up a good point. You said that a lot of people were actually debunking this. Let's look at the enormous size of this program. This is a worldwide program. It's not just in one part of the nation, not just in one state. This is a worldwide program. It is a multi-billion-dollar program. And it is a crime against humanity. It's a crime against nature. If it stops, people stand to lose billions of dollars. So, absolutely, there's going to be people who are going to try and debunk. We see it with other movements. We see it anytime anybody tries to do something that would be effective in stopping the status quo or the profitability of corporations. So absolutely, we're going to see people debunk, we're going to see people question this, and that's good. That means, you know, that also means that we're having an effect and that people are waking up to this issue.
Can I make a point about that too?
Yeah,
sure, of course.
There's really two issues here that are the same issue, but they can be presented two different ways. One is chemtrails, which is what is happening and what has been happening. Two is geoengineering, specifically aerosol in the stratosphere. It's called solar radiation management. This is what they say they're going to be doing. And if people don't believe in chemtrails, no matter. Look at what they say they're going to do. 100 to 200 million metric tons of aluminum every year is going to be dumped evenly around the world to reduce up to 34% sunshine to cool the planet. So, if you don't like the idea that there might, you know, of the conspiracy, and you go, oh, no, they never do that, just look at what they say they're going to do, mm-hmm. and also the effects that they say they're going to, that it has, and the risks that they admit. They say, Rutgers research report, Dr. Bunzel from Rutgers, debated the top geoengineering scientist on the BBC and said that the Rutgers report indicated that up to 2 billion people could be left without food, could be left without rain, not completely, but not enough to grow their crops, not enough to keep their forests going. So,
yeah, in order to cool the planet, it would be catastrophic results.
And Ken Caldera's response was, hey, maybe we have to build institutions to compensate those people for the damages that we've done and to feed those people.
That's right.
And Bunzel said, oh, we will have to feed 2 billion people for 5 years or more? This is what they say they're going to do. If that isn't enough to make you mad, and then hell be it, let the dictators run the earth and let's all be slaves. Because this is the worst thing since the atomic bomb.
And you're absolutely correct, and I just want to stress the importance of sounding the alarm on this issue. What was ironic, as a reporter, and you know, I studied this issue for about a year and a half when I started noticing it, maybe a little bit longer, but I had been studying it. I'm sitting here in a conference, and I heard the scientists saying, this is what we're thinking of doing. We're planning on implementing aluminum, barium, and I'm going, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what we're finding in the soil, thousands of times higher than the normal levels. This is what we're finding in the snowfall. This is what we're finding in the rain. And I'm going, hold on. We're already finding this stuff. So the program that they're saying they're thinking about implementing is the exact same thing.
It's already happening.
Identical.
It's identical.
Is this
in
happening
fact,
everywhere?
What I saw coming after Copenhagen, and we were taking a lot of samples up here in Northern California, and it's just like Mike says, barium, aluminum, strontium, and they were saying, oh, we're going to use sulfur to spray around the earth. And I kept telling my colleagues that are testing, oh, they're going to stop saying sulfur, and they're going to slowly bring the public into the idea, well, aluminum will be cheaper, aluminum will be better. I thought it would take all the way till June. That was my prophecy. By June, they will have switched the whole thing to aluminum, and it will be identical to the chemtrail program. My God, if they do it in one session.
So who's behind this?
Lawrence Livermore is my answer.
Lawrence Livermore?
That's my answer.
So I'm wondering, is this just in Northern California, or where are you finding these levels? All over the world, or?
Australia just came up with an amazing water sample, quite like ours. Thousands of times higher per rainfall in aluminum, strontium. I think they found sulfur, manganese. They went a little bit more further into other elements and got experimental with it, and they found other elements than us. But it's worldwide. Almost every NATO nation that I know has reported this.
And ironically enough,
over Iran.
And those are the same nations that are reporting lingering trails in the sky. The exact same nations. One thing that I wanted to bring up was something that was brought to the attention of David Keith. David Keith, I believe, is the number three geoengineering scientist in the world. He works at the University of Calgary, and he was asked about health issues regarding the potential SAG program that they were thinking about implementing. And he said, you know, we've done a ton of tests, and sulfur dioxide does not have too many adverse health effects. Somebody from the audience had said, well, what about the effects of aluminum on human health when it comes down in environmental health? And his response was, well, we've done a lot of tests on other ingredients. And he said, wait a minute, I'm not asking you about other ingredients. And he put him against the wall, and he said, what about the effects of aluminum? And David Keith swallowed, and he said, well, aluminum we really haven't researched. So he said something to the effect, we could find something terrible tomorrow about the effects of aluminum. So basically what they're saying is they're planning on implementing aluminum. They haven't done any research. And, God, based on all the testing that we've done, it doesn't take a genius to put two and two together that that's what's being sprayed.
Yeah, we've done a lot more research than they have.
The expected rise in dementia is supposed to be 71% in developing countries by the next 20 to 30 years. They don't say that Alzheimer's is 50% of that. They're not saying, they're sure how Alzheimer's is even caused, but we know that aluminum has probably a lot to do with it.
I just watched Brian Williams tonight, and the second lead story was that in the next two decades, Alzheimer's will double.
Yeah, I read
that. And autism has gone from 10 years ago, 1,000 in one, and then last year it was like 106, and now it's 96 to 1. For every 96 kids born, one of them has autism.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it ironic? Aluminum levels in the soil and in water are going up as the rate of these diseases go up. And let me add another thing, too. Ken Caldera said in the conference, man, I'm so glad that Mike, you and the others got the film of him saying this. He said, I would kill 18 people in Mississippi to save 1,800 or 180 in New Orleans. Now, he didn't say governments should consider if they should kill or should. He said, I will kill.
Ken.
Yeah.
That is the kind of man we are dealing with.
Well.
That Teller, Edward Teller, thought this up in the first place, didn't he?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go, father
and,
of the
and
Teller, hydrogen bomb.
And Lowell Wood are partners. Teller's dead now, but Caldera says, I used to work with Edward Teller, the father of the H-bomb at Livermore. I used to work with Lowell Wood. I still do. They're both advisors to Bill Gates, who's funding them on this. And he even said, we used to sit around Livermore and discuss ways to turn weather modification into a military weapon. That's all on the record.
Now, that sounds very interesting. To me, that's probably what's going on right now. They're doing military testing. Because they're also, I mean, there's a way of interacting with HAARP or something can heat up that aluminum in the atmosphere and it'll dry it up and that'll get rid of cloud cover. And so they could have, you know, clear bombing runs without any visibility problems or, you know, starve out the enemy by cutting off the sunlight for their crops.
I can address one test that was done in 2006 or 2007 in Northern California. We had an extreme week of chemtrail activity like we'd never seen it. And then the rains came. We took a single water test, and it was 3,440 parts per billion of aluminum. Now, it should have been one or less. So it was about 3,440 parts, or 3,440 times higher than it should be. That day, we had 1,200 lightning fires. The most the state had ever seen, as admitted the next day by Arnie Schwarzenegger, was 70.
And aluminum will contact.
The most they had ever had was 70 fires going at once, and now there were 1,200 going at once. It was an electrically charged, metallically charged atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Aluminum will help conduct the electricity.
If anyone has any comments, I'd like them to email here at the station to me on my email, which is alohacoral@gmail.com.
And would you like me to get off so you clear a line for you?
Yeah, eventually we'll get
but you're
callers,
doing so well.
Yeah.
Well, just kick me off. I love Mike. I'd like to come out and work with him.
Good. We did have one email. It says, I just don't get why nobody has not flown up and tested the clouds and trails. Prove once and for all what's in them. A twin-engine Cessna could do it.
I doubt that a twin-engine Cessna could keep up with the KC-135 And also, it would be very difficult to get that kind of FAA clearance. The military corridor and the commercial corridor are not the same. What we could use is a donor to supply the $2,500 an hour for about 3 hours so we can use an atmospheric testing jet, and we would love to do that. But I'm a farmer.
Yeah, exactly.
So how are the crop yields in Northern California? Are they falling when there's all this chemtrail activity?
You want to deal with the pH, Mike?
I know trees are dying in Northern California.
Exactly. Seeing up in Northern California, the trees are dying, and the farmers are really having difficulty reaping a crop, especially the ones that are not using Monsanto or GMO, seeds. So, ironically, the farmers are sitting there scratching their head, what's going on? Something's going on here. Well, sure enough, the soil test came in, pHs were high, and then literally thousands of times the regular amount of aluminum was found in those, and that's what was jacking up the pH. So
that's showing up in our food, too, then, some of that aluminum, right?
But, we're also breathing this mm-hmm. stuff, not only showing up in our food and water, but, we're feeling it. For instance, respiratory illness, which was on the mortality rate, and I have them somewhere, it went from, where am I at, something like 8 to 5 within 6 years. I mean, we're seeing illness, we're jumped through the roof, and then we're seeing the environmental effects. I mean, this is not just something that's going on and we should maybe question it. We have a crisis here. When farmers are not able to yield crops, people are getting sick. We're seeing literally the planet change into an unnatural environment. This is absolutely a crisis, and it definitely needs attention immediately.
Absolutely. And if the government is going to do this, the least they should do is start forming a strategic food reserve like they have for oil.
It's important to know that aluminum in the soil drives the soil pH alkaline. So a conifer forest should be 5.5 to 5.8 pH. Now when they start getting up to 6, 5, 7, you're looking at the horizon of the death of that forest.
Okay.
It might take a decade or a little bit longer, but a conifer forest, without long-term adaptation, without probably hundreds of years, will die in abrupt pH changes like that. And the soils this year in our conifer forest, instead of 5.5, are anywhere from 6.3 to 7.5. And our gardens went the same way. Our crop yields were terrible. I don't know anybody who could grow an heirloom corn. But the aluminum-resistant Monsanto corn does fine.
So they might be involved in this as well. But I imagine they don't make Monsanto conifer trees, do they?
Yes, they do.
Oh, they do?
There's aluminum. No, I can't say it's a Monsanto conifer tree, but it's an aluminum-resistant gene in the conifer seedling.
Ah, interesting. Well, we got to get out there and start planting those, because it looks like this is the way of the future.
Well, we have a better way, because we don't like what they're doing. It's unnatural. And instead of conforming to what they're doing, we're saying no. We demand answers, and we want this to stop.
We have a caller who would like to, who just called my cell phone. Would I get one of you to volunteer to hang up and maybe call back?
Yeah, I'll leave with one last thing. I don't want trouble with Monsanto, so let me make that real clear. Cornell University came up with the aluminum-resistant gene, but there is cross-licensing between these guys, and I would say with, my own personal opinion is that Monsanto has implemented that a long time ago. Monsanto, I don't want to hear from you tomorrow. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Marl.
How's another company we can boycott?
And lines open 427-3772, having a lively conversation about chemtrails, contrails, geoengineering, and Monsanto.
And Monsanto.
Yes, with Mike Murphy and Free Your Freedom. So I've been researching a little bit myself, and it says this one that I wrote down. It says, ground fall out from the chemtrail analyzed in the U.S. contain carcinogens and bacteria. Coincidentally, in the past decades, most jet fuel was re-engineered to reduce fire hazards by adding a long-band pesticide, which reportedly was also found in gel samples from chemtrails. also found were microfibers, which were much finer than asbestos.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And you know what? You're absolutely right. There are tests. I mean, there are tests upon tests, things that are being revealed.
Hi, Free Radio. Yep.
And more people witness
the
waking up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people think it's a kook conspiracy or
something. And we have a caller that's joined the line, the conversation. Would you like to identify yourself or join in, caller?
Well, this is Uncle Dennis.
Hi, Dennis.
And I have been studying these claims of chemtrails for many, many years.
Yeah.
And by that statement, you can guess that that I am not convinced that chemtrails exist. First of all, I'd like to go down the points one by one. Let's talk about chemtrails and what the folks who believe in chemtrails, because I think it is a belief. It's a religion, and it's not backed up by science. So let's go down the points one by one. The first is that contrails, which are water vapor emissions from the burning of fuel in jet engines, only last for a few seconds. That is not true. It is patently not true. Depending on weather conditions at the altitude that aircraft fly, contrails can last not only hours, but days. If the conditions are correct for holding the ice crystals that are what contrails are in the upper atmosphere, those contrails can stay in the upper atmosphere for significant periods of time, and they can spread out from their initial point of emission from the end of the jet engine and spread out and cover large portions of the sky. Mm-hmm. Second point, the patterns in the sky indicate that there is a program in effect to cover the sky with chemtrails. This is also not true, and it's an illusion. When the atmospheric conditions in the upper atmosphere are conducive to maintaining water vapor and ice crystals in the upper atmosphere, every aircraft that flies through that air, that particular layer of air, will leave those ice crystals in the air. And aircraft are flying all over the place, and they fly sometimes if you're in an area where aircraft are flying, say, from Los Angeles to New York over Kansas, you will see not just 10, 20, or 30, you'll see hundreds of contrails every day caused just by commercial aircraft flying overhead. Okay, and they don't all fly in the same direction. Some of them fly other directions. Aircraft fly from Dallas to Detroit or Chicago. So you're going to have some contrails flying east and west and some contrails from aircraft flying north and south. And that's just the way it is.
Okay.
The third issue, that why are there contrails some days and not the next? Contrails are a result of weather and aircraft.
Okay.
If you have a certain weather condition on one day, you will see the contrails, and if the weather conditions are different at the altitude that aircraft are flying on the next day, you won't see the contrails, or they'll disappear very rapidly.
Okay. What about the aluminum, though?
Okay. Let's talk about aluminum. One of the results of weather changes in our atmosphere, and I hope that you and I can agree that there is climate change going on.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Climate change and deforestation on the Asian continent have resulted in a large increase in dust storms in Asia. These dust storms have been followed across the Pacific Ocean onto the North American continent, and most of the time these dust storms enter the continent in northwestern part of the United States from California up to Washington. That's because of the normal air patterns from Asia across the United States. This dust consists mainly of clay particles. clay particles are aluminosilicates. In other words, if the dust blowing off of China blows over North America, those clay particles will be picked up by snow and by rain and deposited on the Earth's surface. And if you test that water for aluminum, you will find aluminum as part of those clay particles.
Okay, I would like to address some of these issues. And
let me say one more thing before we go on.
Okay.
There is a principle in scientific investigation called Occam's razor. This principle is that if you have two explanations for a phenomenon, the simpler of the two explanations is the one that is most likely to be correct. Now, if you're talking about a worldwide conspiracy to put aluminum powder into commercial aircraft engines and fly millions and billions of pounds of this stuff into the atmosphere and try and modify the climate for some reason that is not really fully explainable up until this point. I'm no one to talk about geoengineering at this point. I just want to talk about what's been happening in the 80s. Dust coming over from China, which is the simpler explanation, and which one do you think Occam's razor is going to point
to?
That's
a good point.
Because there's also barium in that dust as well.
Okay, what about the barium?
We're gonna go through these things that you listed, and I'm sorry because, you know, frankly, I'm a little shocked because people are getting sick. People are being hurt from this, but let's address these, one by one, because we definitely need the truth to be told here.
In 2004, the worldwide production of barium was 6 million pounds of barium were produced in chemical processes, and a lot of that barium was processed in China. Same thing for strontium. 16 million pounds of strontium was produced in 2004. You can get this information off the web. So barium and strontium are not unusual in the atmosphere. I agree that there have been some scientific studies that have posited the use of barium and strontium in the atmosphere for certain scientific tests. But the amount that they were using was extremely small compared to the worldwide production.
Dennis, where are you getting your information? A caller just called in to ask me. Because I guess California Air Board tested there was no aluminum coming from China.
That is absolutely correct.
They may have tested on a day when there wasn't a dust cloud coming over from China.
That could be.
And my question is this. You had said contrails are normal. A couple issues on that. If anybody looks at a picture from about 15 years ago, you will not see these patterns in the sky. And no, they are not normal. We're seeing an increase of people reporting them. But let me ask you something. We have pictures of planes spraying these things from areas that aren't even close to their engines. We literally see the aerosol coming out of areas that aren't even near the engine. How would you explain that?
I haven't seen those pictures. I don't even know what aircraft you're talking about. Most of the people who are talking about contrails, chemtrails, are talking about commercial and military aircraft, and I don't believe that, every single aircraft has been modified in that way.
You are saying there's no spraying going on. I want you to tell me how you can explain pictures that we have of airplanes that are spraying. Could you please explain that?
Aren't the trails up higher than commercial aircraft too?
Well, at the meeting they said that
not seen your pictures, and
they
and
are going
frankly,
to be on.
One picture does not an argument make.
There's going to be postings at geoengineeringwatch.com in 5 minutes.
Yeah, .org, and we have several pictures.
Oh.
And then explain to me, why these things are happening now and we weren't seeing them happening 15 years ago. Could you explain that to
the audience? When I was a young boy growing up in Southern California, contrails were a very common thing. And if you weren't around then, you don't know. So the only reason that you may see more contrails today is because there's more aircraft flying today than there were in the 1960s.
And I want to ask you this. If you're wrong, which I believe you are, what are the implications, not only on our environment, what are the implications of humans and the health and people who deserve a right to live, people that deserve to be healthy? What are the implications? Sir, I suggest that you start researching.
Oh, I have researched this.
Well, I should say Dennis is
for many, many years, people have told me about chemtrails, and every time I go and do the research, and every time I find that that the people who are proposing that chemtrails exist, it cannot be proven, and it cannot be demonstrated, and it's not a rational conclusion for the observations that are being made.
Now, sir, would you say that it's plausible that corporate interests sometimes have tried to cover things up, not only with data, to keep their operations going, their profitable operations going? Is that plausible?
I have seen no indication that spraying aluminum into the atmosphere is going to benefit any corporation. And frankly, every study I have read of weather modification for the last 30 years, starting in the 60s, and these are studies that came out starting in the 70s, is that weather modification doesn't work. If what they found is, even in areas where they've tried doing it for very small-scale, specific projects where they were trying to make it rain in a particular place, they could not reliably produce a significant increase in rainfall in that area.
Okay, now weather modification for the purposes of
producing rainfall apparently doesn't work.
All right, that's rain. Well, let the guest respond to that.
You know, we're not saying that this is only weather modification. And certainly at the AAAS meeting, they weren't talking about weather modification at all. So let's not assume and take little bits and pieces and saying this is not happening. Let me ask you, how would you reply to the various patents related to aerosol spraying? One of them is patent number 6, 315-3. Why would they develop these things for aerosol spraying and not implement them with literally millions of people around the world claiming this?
Dennis, there is pictures on this website right now showing clearly KC-135 turning their sprayers on and off. That's what I was told to say. And that's up at geoengineeringwatch.com.
Are these military planes?
What was that website again?
Geo engineeringwatch.org. I'm sorry about that. .org.
Can you give me a website that is not associated with a chemtrail group or a geoengineering group that shows these pictures? Did
you hear that? I'm sorry. Geoengineering groups are very credible.
Anti-geoengineering groups.
Why would a geoengineering group who's denying that they're even doing this put pictures of them doing it? It doesn't make sense. And frankly, I understand where you're at, but you're just not holding water on this issue.
So you can get back. You can call back.
I wish I could. I mean, the evidence is out there. We even have pictures, and you can't explain that. Now, you did make a point. You said, I don't see how any corporation could benefit from the programs that they were talking about at the AAS meeting. Well, somebody has to modify the airplanes. We have patents, certainly, there's profitability in that, and we're looking at, we were talking about a worldwide operation of dumping megatons of aluminum into the air, and that that costs money. So yeah, we're not talking about there's no profitability in this. We're looking at billions of dollars of profitability. And beyond that, we're looking at various potential agendas as well.
Well,
okay, Dennis.
I have investigated these claims of chemtrails, and I have found the evidence lacking for many years. I'm not just talking about recently, but for many, many years, people have been talking about chemtrails, and if you take a look at what they're showing on their websites and compare it to what normal contrails are, there's no difference from chemtrails and contrails. So
that doesn't hold water either.
There's no difference. I heard
geoengineers, I heard scientists talk about there is a big difference. They were talking about the difference between what they were going to be doing and contrails, and right now you're telling me that there's not a difference? Well,
no,
you know, if you want to take that
this
science,
I'm not talking about the future.
Scientists at the AAAS meeting, go ahead, because they were certainly clear about that.
Well, those are proposals. Those proposals are currently unfunded.
Okay, but you're telling me right now there's no difference. That's interesting.
Dennis, but I mean, don't you find that interesting that they're talking about it in this meeting now? Doesn't that suggest that maybe someone has been testing it, possibly the military, maybe not corporate?
Well, like I say, there have been many attempts at weather modification, and all of them have been found to be unworkable. And
as far as rain is concerned,
we're not talking about weather modification. I was at the event all day.
We have another call that would like to come in.
They were talking about
atmospheres.
I'm sorry, your argument is not holding weight. Thank you very much.
Well, this is lively. We have another person like to call back in.
Before I leave, I just want to say that I invite people to do their research and do it with an open mind. It is very easy to throw your hands up and say the sky is falling and produce a couple of pictures to support your argument. It's a different thing to actually produce proof of something that, you know, requires belief.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you. Okay. It was great. Okay, now we got a call. Let's see who this is.
Yeah, Free Radio. Oh, you must have wanted to go on the air. Here we go.
Hello?
Yeah, she's just about to put on.
Yeah, we have a call.
Oh, okay, a couple of things. First of all, Dennis, I would really like to see a photo album of you in the 60s, 70s, or 80s with an expanding contrail behind you. And better yet, more than one, or even a crisscross like we see today. Even one with an expanding trail with a date on it, that would be a good start. Second, the California Air Resource Board did test what was coming over from Asia because it was a big concern. And this is all state stuff that you can find from Rosalind Peterson, USDA, who has an agricultural website. I'm not sure the name of it, but it's linked from California Skywatch or other sites, that shows all the state data that they have no aluminum crossing the Pacific. It starts just offshore and enters that way. So you're wrong there, Dennis.
There should be aluminum in Hawaii, then, if it's coming from China, right? Is there any there?
There's no aluminum reaching the United States across the Pacific.
that's bottom line. But, you know, you have to realize there are always going to be people that debunk whether, it could be... they could be acting on the behalf of a corporate interest, you know, whatever the motive may be.
And he also said a couple of pictures.
A huge cover-up.
My God, go on YouTube and put chemtrails in. A couple of pictures, Dennis. And by the way, I don't have a chemtrail website. I have a geoengineering website. I'm in constant contact with the different geoengineers. I have emails from Ken Caldera where he's asking me to change this and that. I have emails from Dr. Bunzel. So if I was just some crackpot chemtrail guy, why would they be sending me emails?
But you know what? The best thing, we don't, at this point, I think Dennis kind of sealed us right because he showed us true colors. And, you know, his arguments didn't hold up to anything. And you know, if anybody has any questions about this, please, you know, ask us about it. We have the information. Geoengineering Watch has a lot of information, as well as California Sky Watch and Deborah Whitman's website as well. So the information's out there. And, you know, I think what I want to do is encourage everybody to look at this if you're not right now, because this is very serious.
And what do you have to say about the Asilomar conference coming up?
Well, before we go there,
all right.
What just happened is exactly what I'm talking about. If people want to argue about chemtrails, I don't even bother. Hey, look at what they say they're going to do now. Do you really want 100 to 200 metric tons of aluminum floating down on your children when we know what we know about aluminum? This guy didn't address that. He was more interested in debunking us for half of what we're saying. The other half he can't touch because we're repeating what the scientists say. And that is the big question. Do we have the right to dump aluminum to save the weather in the United States and starve Africa and Asia to do it? Because that's exactly what Rutgers, Caldera, and David Keith say is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no debate there. They're going to hurt.
Yeah, there's a public record of that, right?
There are going to be people complicit in this cover-up because it is a huge worldwide operation.
Well, Dennis isn't
frankly,
complicit,
I'm on the other side. You know, I want to reveal the truth because I love humanity. Other people might love the corporate interest or, you know, whatever their motive may be. But we really need to question, look at the facts, and take action on this issue.
And I encourage, I put those videos up for you, Dennis. They're there. If you're
and,
on the website
if
right
anyone,
now.
If anyone would like to talk to you more, could they call or email you both?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Should I put that out there?
Yeah, admin, A-D-M-I-N, mm-hmm. like administrator, at geoengineeringwatch.org.
Okay.
And I'm going to get off now and give it back to Mike, but that guy made me furious.
Well, to be fair, Dennis is an Earth Firster, I hear.
Yeah, we want to have everybody's point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we appreciate people like that coming
on. Thanks,
Mark. Some other people might have had those very same questions. And, you know, we have the facts, we have the research here, and it's our world, it's our sons and daughters. You know, neighbors, whoever.
I didn't hear one study that he quoted. I didn't, and I would love for him to email me a picture, and I'll put it up on the website.
Well, maybe we can get you guys back together again some future date and debate this further.
You know, we would love to. I can give out my blog. I just did a new blog which has some of the videos that I made. One which explains the difference between a quote unquote chemtrail. Geoengineering and a contrail. That's at truthmediaproductions.blogspot.com.
Truth Media Blogs Productions.
Yeah, truthmediaproductions.blogspot.com. I tried to Google it, but it's not coming up yet because it's brand new. If you missed that, I do have an email address, which is whtagfp@hotmail.com. That's a real tough email address, so I said it real slow.
Great.
That's great.
So we got to start wrapping this up soon, and it's been great having you guys, and we hope to do this again.
Yeah, didn't get everything I wanted to ask, but I got plenty of input here, and it's been a lively discussion.
And we do have a winner on the Battle of the Bands for the best band in Santa Cruz this week.
Yeah. We did have a vote, and the winner is Superior Olive this week.
So we'll be hearing that song again next week against two other contenders. So if you're a local musician, send in a copy of your best song to go up against them.
Let's say goodbye to our guests. Thank you very much for calling in.
We'll see you at Asilomar.
See you there.
I not only want to thank you for having us on, but, you know, I believe both of us believe we're at a crisis state, and this is the utmost importance. And we want to thank you for at least addressing this issue. And God bless you. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good evening. Good night.
You too. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah. And this is Tangerine Dream Team. We have a phone call.
Hello, Free Radio.
Hello. Okay, just a second. We'll put you on the air.
Okay, we have a call about chemtrails. Would you like to...
Hi, this is Gary. I'm calling about chemtrails.
Yeah. Were you listening to the show all the way?
I didn't hear much of the show, but I do know a little bit about the Department of Energy's aerosol spraying program.
Okay.
The government's been engaged for quite a long time, and their program's accelerating now. There's hundreds and hundreds of different compounds in our air, plus Morgellons disease, as documented by Dr. Hildegard Steininger, one of the foremost toxicologists on the planet.
Yeah.
General Stubblebine, who was head of Air Force Intelligence for 20 years, has given a lot of documentation on this. And his mate, Reba Labo, has documented the medical side of this. She's a doctor. Personally, I deal in string theory detection technology. And we're seeing cesium and cerium, sarin, EX nerve gas in everybody, in billions and millions. Things that should not be in people. We're seeing barium as an isotope, a radioisotope, an element, an oxide. This has already been well indicated by the Rockefellers, by Obama's science czar, who said in his book Ecoscience that we're going to take everybody out with all these compounds. I mean, it's in our face every day. And the program is changing all the time. It's evolving, and they're attacking.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we'll hear about...
Hello? Apologize about that. All right.
Well, this is Freak Radio, where things are freaky.
That happens. And
we're running out of time here. You know, caller, could you call back later or something? Maybe we can get you to guest on a future show when we...
Well, whatever. I'm just saying that, you know, the sheeple out there don't seem to want to face reality. And the reality is that all you got to do is watch some of these planes and what they're doing and the unevenness of their mixtures sometimes. And it's fairly evident that these are not any kind of vapor trails. Vapor trails do not act like that.
Mm-hmm.
They do not disseminate.
Yeah, I'm glad that you made that statement. You got in time, and we'd like to thank you. So
okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Okay, this wraps up the show for tonight. It's been a great time, and we're glad you listened. Listen next week for Tangerine Dream Team.
It's like the time that this minister in
Free
Indiana
Radio
claimed
Santa
that the theme song for Mr. Ed, that old television show about the talking horse, if you played the Mr. Ed theme song backwards, it said Satan is the source.
Misinformation.
Taking scissors to play with the black folk down in Florida. Colored pens and for sexing up the. I'm the someone who knew. They're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong. In June,
in the canteen down at Columbine, with the
rags they never
found,
striking
matches up at
Waco
when they
burnt it
to the ground. Without me,
Oklahoma
wasn't
possible
at all.
See my silhouette
in the Super 8
around
grassy knoll.
Everything you know.